The funny thing is, I was thinking that because they associated French with, you know, having fun, with actually learning, with feeling safe, you could have taught them Swahili and they would have gone to study Swahili instead. So, hi, Christina.
Hi.
And yeah, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
And well, to get things started, first, just tell us a little bit about your story, especially when it comes to languages, you know, your experience as a language student yourself and a language teacher later on.
Sure, yeah. Well, I started my language learning when I was in eighth grade. We had a choice between two languages only, Spanish and French. At the time, I wasn't really very interested in learning Spanish, so I chose French. It wasn't the greatest experience. My teacher was a first year teacher. She was scared of us. So I know we kind of, you know, pushed boundaries probably a lot more than we could have, which is unfortunate because I didn't have a really strong foundation of French starting out. So when I went to high school, I continued into high school. I went through the entire French program through AP French 5. So I didn't take the AP test though. I was scared. I didn't want to do poorly. So I didn't take it. But I didn't feel like me being in the classes were just so I could take that AP test to prove I could do anything. Right. When I was a senior in high school, they started offering, well, okay, before that, I was 16 and I went to Germany with my orchestra. And that completely changed my life. Meeting people from another culture who spoke a different language, it was just, I mean, I don't even know how to explain it. Unless it's like you've experienced it yourself, you don't understand. I don't know how to explain it to you, but it was just something that there's something inside that shifted. And I wanted to learn more languages. So I wanted to learn German, obviously, because I had gone to Germany. I'd met German people. I lived with a German family for a month. So I really wanted to take German. But that year they were also offering Russian, and this was 1989, so it wasn't the best time, but at the time it was fine. We had a Russian teacher that came into the classroom twice a week. We were taught through video two times a week, and then we had like a study hall, like test day on Fridays. So I was like, well, I want to take German, I want to take French, and I wanted to take Russian. I want to take them all, right? So I did. My senior year, I enrolled in all three of them. Unfortunately, my experience in my German class was not what I would have wanted. Like, if I thought that my French one at the eighth grade was not good, this was not good. He was ready to retire, 100%. I had both extremes, yeah? He was ready to retire. We spent 3 weeks on the alphabet. I'm like, dude, I want to learn how to speak the language. I'm not here for a grade, right? I'm here because I want to learn learn German. Yeah. So I went to my principal and I was like, so, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, I like him. He seems like a nice person, but like he's an instructor. The other German teacher didn't have an opening except for French 5. But back then you had to get permission from your teachers to drop. So I went to my French teacher and I said, French teacher, I would like to drop this class and take this German class. And she laughed at me and said, that's not going to happen. And so I didn't get to take German that year like I wanted to, but I did take Russian and I really, really liked it a lot. It was a great experience having native speakers. Mm-hmm. The actual classroom teacher, well, she wasn't a classroom teacher because it was distance learning. It was through the computer. This was 1989. So it wasn't Zoom. It was her talking to us. And then if we had a question, that we had to pick up a telephone. We had a special telephone. It was like the back phone. Okay. We would pick up the telephone and we'd ask her questions. And so she would answer them, she would. But she wasn't the strongest of teachers. And I wasn't the strongest of students learning through the television. I was like, I can't learn this way. So she offered me to come to the studio where they recorded, because they recorded at my old middle school or junior high school at the time. So I was actually one of the two students that she talked to in the class. And that was quite beneficial for me because it's kind of like, you know, I had somebody right there in front of me who taught me how to speak German. Russian. My Russian teachers, though, were fantastic. I mean, we learned songs. I mean, like, I don't remember a lot of Russian. I did take it in college. I loved it so much that I was like, I'm taking it in college for fun, right? Like, it was like some of my electives. I just loved it so much. So I took it with them first and it was great. And then I went to university. I went to the 4-year university. Oh my gosh, they killed it for me. It was all grammar, accusative, dade. Okay, great, super good. What about the songs? It's not that I only wanted to do songs, but I learned so much through the conversations that we had with the teachers. And I was like, what's this? I mean, like, textbook, grammar review, gross. So I dropped it. They lost me. I took 13 hours of Russian. And my last semester was I just didn't like it. And I was like, I don't know. Why would anyone take Russian at university if this is what it's like? Except for the grade.
Yep.
So I quit languages at that point at university. I was planning to be a teacher. I was going to be an English teacher. That was my goal. I wanted to do that. But my dad lost his job and I had to find a scholarship. And so I found a scholarship called the Kansas Teacher Scholarship. And it basically paid for everything. And I was like, yeah, sounds good. But I had to teach a hard to fill discipline. And that meant a language or math or science. And so I already had a lot of experience with languages. I thought, all right, yeah. And then I was like, Russian? Maybe not. Because I was like, how marketable am I going to be in 1993 after the fall of the Berlin Wall? No one wanted to speak Russian anymore. I found that out when I went to the Czech Republic. They're like, no Russian. And I'm like, oh, but let me do this. But they're like, mm-mm. So I decided, okay, so I'll take French. So that's how I got into French. I was a junior in college. I went to live in France for a year. I lived in a town called Besançon. I really enjoyed it a lot. I lived in Paris for a little while too. I learned an awful lot, but it was still very traditional language learning versus the acquisition part. So I became a teacher. I taught the way I was taught. Why would I teach any other way? I know no other way. Although we talked about, you know, Suggestopedia, you know, like you sit in the dark, you just speak to them and they learn it. Like, that wasn't practical. We all knew that when they were teaching us all the methodologies, the theories of how to acquire language. We knew we were going to get in there, use a textbook, use the workbook.
Yeah.
We knew that's what's going to happen. So I've been teaching for a couple of years. I think I was in my 7th year of teaching. Little things had happened. I'd had experience at a workshop that I came back and I was like, oh, I want to use this, right? It was a lots of communicative, they called it communicative. And I used a lot of French when I came back in my French 2 class. I had this kid raise his hand and go, Miss Beard, you can't not speak French to us all year long and then come back from a workshop and then all of a sudden think we're going to understand you. And I was like, oh, yeah. Right. I mean, like, I was like, well, you should be, right? And like, I put my teacher hat on. Like, inside, I died a little, right? Inside, I was like, oh, no. Like, what have I been doing? What disservice am I doing to these kids? Are they having the same kind of experience that I had?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I took kids to France that same year. My French 3 class, I took my French 3 class to France. They were terrified to speak. They hid behind me. Oh, Miss Beard, go and ask them. I'm like, I'm not asking them where the Hard Rock Cafe is. You ask them, right? So I got back and I was unsettled. So I had these small little experiences. I did some self-reflection. I looked at the experience that I had when I took those kids to France. And I was like, something's got to change. It just happened that at the end of the school year, I had gotten this little pamphlet in the mail. And I looked at it and I went, oh, that's interesting. And I put it on my pile. But it was a pamphlet for a workshop near where I live for TPRS.
Mm.
I know you probably heard it before. This was 2003. I went to the workshop. I paid for it myself. I was like, okay, I need to find something. And I need to find something fast because I don't think I can sustain this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, I'll spend the, you know, $300. I'll go to this workshop and let's see if we find out. Oh my goodness. In 30 minutes, I had drunk the Kool-Aid. 30 minutes of her telling us about brain research, talking about like what it even was, because I had no idea what it was, right? It was such a bad pamphlet. It didn't explain it at all.
Right.
It was just like innovative, it's fantastic. And I'm like, okay, I've heard all of those words about everything I've ever done.
Right.
And I decided to take a chance and absolutely
bit off
the way I thought about language acquisition, how I thought about who I was as a teacher, and like where I wanted to go, like where my goals were going to be. Again, I still kind of get teary-eyed about it. So yeah, I went back to school and I went to my principal and I went, principal, I want to do this, can I? And he was like, I'm all for innovation, let's do it. He's like, but you're not going to know what you're doing. Don't let them know that you don't know what they're doing, what you're doing. And I'm like, I go, yes, sir. No problem, sir. But I went into it saying, listen, kids, I don't know what I'm doing. We're going to work on this together and we're going to figure this out and we're going to do it the best way possible. So I got rid of my textbooks. I haven't used a textbook since 2003. I'm mainly a storyteller in many different ways. I didn't know that that was my calling. It's my calling. Yeah, I can tell a story, man. It's unfortunate that I'm the only one in my department that does this. I've tried to influence others because I became so passionate about it. That you have to want it. I think I wanted it. It was the perfect timing. I'd never heard of it before. I was searching for something, and then once I met it, I was like, "This is for me." I will say though, that when I brought it up to my French 4 class, they were highly resistant. They didn't. They were like, "Ms. B, we didn't spend 3 years with you to take French 4 to all of a sudden you change the way you're teaching." And so they were the only class I didn't change. I let them stay with it. They even had an exchange student in there, which would have been fantastic. Yeah. But they were like, no, we want to just do it the way we've learned. So I let them, but all the other ones, they all changed. They didn't have a choice. I will say that I think that over the years, I've changed a lot by how I started back then to where I am now. But I will say that I think that back then, they were better. They acquired so much more because I didn't know what I was doing. Okay. Because I took a lot of risks. I pushed them. My expectations were really high and I didn't let them fail. And like, I think that as we learn more like strategies to help scaffold, because we want no one to be left behind, right? But I feel like my students' French probably is not quite as high as it had been back then. Like it was impressive.
I was
impressed. So yeah. So that's basically how I got to where I'm at anyway. Long path, but there it is. Thanks.
Yeah, awesome. I have so many comments and questions that come to my mind. Like, first of all, I guess you were always interested in languages as a student yourself, as a kid, right? Because you were talking about, or not really, because you were talking about taking French, Spanish, Russian, German.
Sure. So, no, so my family, my dad's the kind of guy that's like, gonna speak English, you live in this country, right? I mean, like, he's one of them. He can't, I'm like, I think I was an utter disappointment to him when I decided to be an English teacher. Besides the fact being a teacher, like, that was probably a disappointment. He has three teachers in his family, so dad, you did something that made us want to be a teacher. But I mean, he's a great guy, but like, he was not very supportive in a lot of things. And so I took French just because it was we had two choices and I was like, well, everyone takes a language, so which one? But it wasn't really until I went to Germany, right? It really wasn't until then. I mean, I liked French, you know, but it didn't mean anything. You know what I mean? It didn't mean anything. It was just, I was taking the language for the class. And when I went to Germany, I attached the language to the people and I attached the language to the place. And I think that's a bad thing about like we in the United States, we are like, I live in Kansas, I'm landlocked and I'm surrounded. Although we have Spanish speakers, it's not the same thing as being able to attach the place and the people and the culture. So yeah, so it wasn't until I hit Germany that things right. completely changed for me. Yeah.
It's not Florida or California. Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I'm just thinking about my experience and it's pretty much the same. Like English for me, it was just one more subject that you need to pass in order to just go on with your studies. But it didn't, yeah. And right now, I always talk about it, like it's my absolute passion, like to learn languages. But yeah, that's really interesting what you said, because I'm just reflecting on my own journey. And that's the thing I love the most about other languages, is being able to access other cultures, speaking to people from different countries, getting to know them better. And also, you know, I'm from Spain, I live in Poland. So mm-hmm. And here in Poland, because it's not such a popular language, most young people speak English. So if you're a foreigner,
yeah,
living here, or an expat, whatever you want to call it, you don't really need to speak the language in order to get by, you know? It's not like if you go to Spain, you better speak Spanish, right? Or and a lot of foreigners just don't bother learning the language. They just learn little things here and there. But I wanted to, and I've done it, and I can feel it when I talk with Polish people, with native speakers. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, if later on you're an asshole, you know, they're not going to like you. Just,
right.
You know, but what I mean is that first impression of you, you're already getting along much better. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But the reason I ask you is because I've also seen it in myself, my students, and a lot of people that you were talking about Russian.
Yeah.
The fact that you loved it the first time around, but then when you went on to college and you started like textbook traditional way, hated it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately,
I love it. I love Russian. I wish I could have continued with the teachers that I initially had.
Yeah.
They were the teachers that I had in high school were the same teachers I had the first year I went to junior college. I went to a community college, and they were the same teachers. And they urged me to take an upper level Russian class. Mm. So they're like, you know, it was like during the summer before I hit college, I took a 300 level class in Russian. And then I had to go back and take like a 200 level Russian class when I got to university. And it was it was going to that higher thing where we were doing things, not just grammar, but dropping back down to where it was just like drill and kill. Yeah. I mean, I still love Russian. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what it is about it, but it's just like it's always attracted me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that you loved learning Russian and then you hated learning Russian, not Russian.
Right. Oh yeah, I don't want to make that clear because I know.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, I didn't use the right word. But I've seen that a lot, like the difference it makes in a language student. And I want to ask you about your students when it comes to that, because, well, first of all, when you started teaching, again, you talked about it, like you didn't know an alternative. So you just went with whatever you knew. But it must have been frustrating, like somewhere within you must have been frustrated, because I guess you remember how much you didn't like it, as opposed to how much you enjoyed other ideas, other methods, but you had to stick with it because you just didn't know an alternative.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure when you are a young teacher. Yeah. When you're inexperienced.
Right.
There's a lot of pressure from the other teachers that are like in your department. I loved my first department. I'm not putting them down in any way, but I do feel like there's a lot of pressure. You go in and they're like, here's the textbook, here's the workbook. And you're like, okay, I guess, right? You're like, I guess this is what I'm going to do. Right. I didn't know any other way of teaching. I took methodology classes specifically for language learning, but it was still very general. Mm. There wasn't like, okay, this is what you should do to get them to like, you know, acquire this, or this is how you should read a novel, or this. I don't really remember much. I do think I was well prepared to be a teacher through my program, but I don't think I was well prepared to teach the actual language. And I don't think they do much better. I've talked to some of the new teachers that come to my school and ask them if they've heard of, you know, comprehensible input, if they even know what it is. Or I used to be department head. I gave that up because it was a big fight that I didn't want to fight anymore. But when I was department head, I was also part of the hiring process, right? And so I would ask people, do you know what comprehensible input? No, that wasn't the question. The question was, like, what philosophy do you adhere to as a language expert? You know, what's your philosophy of language acquisition? That kind of question. And then they would always bring up like Stephen Krashen, but then I would go, really? So I would follow up and then they wouldn't know how to answer the question.
Right.
They were like, oh, I really think that we should use 90% of target language in the classroom. And I'm like, really? That's great. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Could you please tell me how you do that? And then they're like, well, I give them directions in Spanish. It was mostly Spanish teachers for hiring, you know, but I was just like, okay. So if they didn't have like a laundry list of things of how they made sure that they stayed in the target language, I was like, okay, you're staying comprehensible, isn't it? You're saying Stephen Krashen because those are buzzwords right now, you know, but I don't even know if you really know what it is.
Yeah.
It's been a really interesting ride for sure.
So. Yeah, they knew the theory, right? But then.
Right. Yeah.
It's funny because my mom taught French in college in Spain for her career, and when like a few years ago when I started with my project, I started reading Stephen Krashen's books, and so I went to a couple of conferences in France here in Europe. And when I told my mom that I was reading Krashen's books, she remembered Krashen from her studies back in the day. But exactly the same thing you were talking about. He was mentioned in her studies, but my mom didn't really know what the whole thing was about or how you apply it in the classroom, you know. And of course, they didn't have the internet back then, so it's. You just couldn't go to YouTube and Stephen Krashen interview or you know, theory.
No, whatever. Back then you actually had to do the research yourself. Yeah, you had to go to the library. I mean, we had computers, but I mean, it was still like in its infancy for sure. But like they had us read his hypotheses, but like I didn't really know how to read it. I didn't know what it meant. It's kind of like, you know, when my whole paradigm shifted and I you know, from that traditional teacher into this, you know, crazy I am standing on a ledge kind of teacher, I didn't really know what I was doing that first year. And so I started telling stories much like I learned in the workshop, like how they told me to do it, but it didn't feel right for me. It didn't feel right. And I was like, I can't do the rules that they're telling me to do. It just doesn't feel natural to me. It's not me. So I just did what I thought that I needed to do in order to make it the best experience for myself. Here's how I want to be honest. I think that I tell my students this too. I go, if I have fun, if I believe in what I'm doing, then you're going to have fun and you're going to believe in it too. But if I'm up there and I don't buy into what I'm saying or what I'm doing. Like, you know, some people don't like to read novels, but if you go into it not liking to read the novel and you're like, oh, I have to read this novel because the department says I have to, the kids are gonna be like, oh, we have to read this novel because the department says we have to. Whereas if you go in and go, we're gonna read this novel and we're gonna have a great time and we're gonna learn language as we do it. And we're not, you know, we can absolutely question what's happening in the novel if you want to. If we want to try to do that, we can like do side stories and stuff like that, which we do. But like I go into it with enthusiasm and love, and they come back at me with enthusiasm and love. Of course, I've built that over the year, right? Like I built that trust over the year. And so they're able to come with me. So I do think that you do have to bring that enthusiasm. Right. So I didn't really know what I was doing. There was actually a national conference in my town. Well, it was where I grew up, where my parents lived. There was a national conference for TPRS the next year. And the week before they had the conference, there was a fluency fast class. Now this was all in its infancy. Like it's not the big juggernaut that it is now. Okay. So, but back then they had like a week worth of fluency fast. You had to pay separately for that than for the conference. Now they combined it. so smart. I did it a couple years after. So I went to the Fluency Fast classes before the national conference because I thought, well, I want to see what Blaine Ray does. I want to see what Susan Gross does. I want to see what Von Ray does. I want to see if they really follow the rules. And can I tell you, they don't. They did it the same way I did it. So they have the rules, I think, there to help guide you, right? It's a foundation for you to say, okay, you should circle, you should park, you should only add a little bit of new information or whatever. But like for me, I mean, I did a lot of this, you know, versus going like this. And again, I think that's exactly that's what I saw them doing in practice of those fluency fast classes. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think like if anyone's considering making the shift, I definitely think having a mentor is really important. A coach, somebody who has done it, has an idea of how things work that you can talk to via Zoom or phone, or if you're in the same city, goodness, yay, getting together. Because I think that's the best and easiest way to maintain. I was stubborn. I'm a stubborn woman. And I was like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be successful and I'll do everything that I can to figure it out. I did have a kid one time raise his hand and he was like, Ms. Beard, I get you. I'm learning, but all these disjointed stories, he's like, I'm getting confused. He's like, I don't even know how to start a story. I don't know. You know, there were like a couple of complaints throughout. I say it's one kid, but it's like throughout time. And so I made shifts and changes in the way I instructed based on that feedback from the students, right? Mm-hmm. So I tried to listen to what they were saying as what is more effective for them, and then figured out a way that it could fit so that they could feel safer, right? It's really more making sure that they could feel safe, that they could create in the language that they're scared about anyway. Americans, I think, you know, people say what we're lazy. They say that we don't want to learn languages, but I think that one of our main problems is we don't want to make mistakes. Like we're like perfectionists, and I'm not saying others aren't like that, but can I tell you, like the Germans, like they just go. They don't care if they make mistakes. They're like, well, do you understand me? All right, move on. You know what I mean? Whereas we're like, oh, was that supposed to be le? And it's like, oh, just I understand you. It's fine. And so that's taken years for me, right? Because I'm a French teacher, and I'm sorry, but the French are very, they want accents the right direction and they want spelling to be perfect. And that's how I learned French, that I needed to be perfect. And so I try to tell my students, I'm like, perfection isn't what we're looking for. Proficiency is what we're looking for. I want to be able to understand what you're saying, what you're writing, but like that perfection, you can perfect in English? No, no. Let me answer that question for you. No.
Yeah, again, because communication, the message is the most important thing, right?
Yeah.
And like you said, like native speakers make mistakes all the time.
Yeah. Native speakers change their language. Like English is getting rid of li at the end of adverbs, right? So we don't say the ly at the end of adverbs anymore. It sounds right. I mean, it sounds wrong to me.
Right.
Sounds wrong to me. My head, I always go li when they don't put it. But like, I mean, native speakers change their language. So they speak incorrectly, they speak incorrect, and then they change the language to where someday no one will know that it used to be incorrectly.
Right. Yeah. Like,
you know? So, I mean, I'm okay with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
I can't remember who I heard say this, but I saw a quote, heard someone say that their native people don't make mistakes in their language. They really don't. I mean, it's their language, they don't make mistakes.
Right.
And I thought, fascinating, like, thought of that. Like, you don't really make a mistake.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Yeah, like, technically it is a mistake, but it's just the language evolving.
Yeah.
You're saying, like, real fun or real instead of really, like, real scary instead of really scary, for example, right? Yeah.
Made fresh. No, it's freshly made. It's freshly, but whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter though, right? I'm like, whatever. Yeah, it's because really it's social media. Because they see it incorrect all the time, they're like, oh yeah, okay, that's right. That's right now.
So. They get the input, then the output comes out, right? It just
right? So totally makes sense. I'm not mad at them about it. Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Yeah, and I want to ask you about your students' experience when you decided to change to comprehensible input, like both from the perspective of results, you know, but also how they felt about it. If they felt, you know, less pressure, you know, put on themselves, or they feel more relaxed. And
I mean, as far as the results, I kind of already touched on it a bit, that I mean, like the output I got from them after them having so much input was, I mean, I wish I still had things that I could show you. I mean, amazing. And French is really hard to spell, right? I mean, French has so many silent letters in it. So like it's not even just the input here, because the input here is different than the input from here, right? So, I mean, to try to get those as equal as you can so that they kind of stay in the same, you know, they're where their level is, right? They're A1, they're A2, or, you know, novice low, novice mid. You try to keep everything so you want something way up here, something way down here. And definitely French spelling is hard. And I mean, like, we did practice spelling. I don't want you to think we didn't practice spelling. We did practice spelling here or there, but really only with words that I was targeting. Like that was back in the day, right? Words that I was targeting, I asked them to know how to spell those. And I thought, because if you can do these targeted words, you can retell the story and mess up the other details, misspelled those details, and it doesn't really matter, because you're going to be able to understand the skeleton of the story or the skeleton of what you're trying to say, right? Mm-hmm. So that was great. I had several students who switched Spanish into French for various reasons, but my colleague had a daughter who had taken, my colleague actually is a Spanish teacher, and she grew up in Bolivia. Her parents were missionaries. And so her children all learned how to speak Spanish because, well, I mean, she was a not native Spanish, but native Spanish speaker, right? She lived there her whole life, right? So it was obvious that her youngest daughter was going to take Spanish, right? So she did, but then she decided to switch to French. She started her junior year, so she had 2 years with me. And so she had this experience of learning Spanish, and then she had the experience of learning French. At the end of like that senior year, she came to me, like, again, not all students come to me and tell me about the experience, but because this was a daughter of my colleague, she came and she just said, you know, I thought I was going to college and taking Spanish. She's like, but I love French so much that I really wanted to, even though I have this familial background in Spanish, you have intrigued me, right? Like the way I've learned it was effortless. Well, she went to college, and I think it may have been her first year, she took a class where she had to write a letter in a college class, right? She had to write a letter to somebody, I think. She decided to write the letter to the French Spanish department. And she interviewed me because it was part of like the whole process. She had to interview somebody. So she interviewed me, and her letter was trying to convince the language department there to make a shift from this traditional way of teaching a comprehensible input. So she did research on Krashen, on comprehensible input. She interviewed teachers, CI teachers, and then put this all together in this like letter paper, and they shared it with me, which was really nice, and I cried. I mean, how do you not, you know? Just like, I had such an impact. I mean, I want to say it was me, but I do think it was the methodology. You know, I mean, I definitely think that I have passion in the classroom, and like I said, I bring forward and push towards my students what I want them to bring back at me. So I think it's partially me, but I want to hope that it's also methodology in French. I want it to be French too. But like, if she switched to a CI teacher at university and it wasn't French, I would support that too.
So. Yeah. Like, it's a combination of the two, like your passion, you know, and on the other side, the methodology, because she was actually enjoying the process. She was actually learning the language.
I mean, like, and now, I mean, like, so about 10 years ago, I switched to the International Baccalaureate Program. Mm-hmm. When they, when my administrator approached me about teaching in the IB program, I was slightly concerned, right? Because I thought, oh, what does that mean? Like, am I going to have to change the way I teach? And so I said to her, I was like, you know, Kelly, I don't know how I'm going to say no to you. I mean, I don't know if I was being asked or being told. I mean, they asked, but I don't know if they were asking or if I was being told. But I was like, do you think I'm going to have to change the way I teach? Because if I have to go back to what I had been doing, I'm like, I just don't think I would be happy doing that. I don't think I could do it. And she said, you know, Tina, the IB program doesn't have any prescribed methodology. They want you to teach them French. They want them to acquire the French at this particular level, and they don't care how you get there. It's not important how you get there. You can use a textbook, but they don't prescribe one. They don't even suggest any. There is no IB book. So she's like, go, you do you. I will say I did live in a little bit of a stress that first like testing year, because it takes a little bit of time to get them to the test. So the first testing year, I was a little bit concerned because I was like, oh, have I prepared them enough to compete with the rest of the world, right? I mean, like, that's the thing. Most of us live in the, you know, Northern Hemisphere, and that's Northern Hemispheres all take the test together. And so did I prepare them enough? Are they going to be able to pass the test? Are they going to exceed on the test? But yeah, I didn't have much to worry about. They did fine that first year. They did fine. My kids have only gotten better. So last year, I think I told you, but last year, like, they scored out of 7. 2 of my students got a 7 out of 7. One of those students scored a 7 in every single skill except speaking. Speaking, they didn't quite get to the 7. But every other skill, they got to a 7. And then the other one, all of them except 2 of the tests. So, I mean, like, wow. Really, like, really good.
Yeah, sorry, like, that's 7 out of 7, right?
7 out of 7. So that's, like, only 10% of the test takers that year get a 7 out of 7. They keep the cap at 10%. But 2 of my students scored in the top 10% of the world. I mean, like, and I haven't changed the way I taught. Mm-hmm. Not really, you know. I do have to a little bit in their senior year. I do kind of have to start teaching them how to talk about pictures, you know, more pointedly. But like, it's not like we haven't been speaking the whole time. This last year, they started a listening, right? That this was the first year they had a listening assessment. Their listening assessment was me asking them questions and us having a conversation for 10 minutes, right? And so this last year was the first year they had actual listening. I had no idea what to be on the listening test. They could be multiple accents. I think they had a Quebec accent. They had someone from Africa and they had a French accent, right? So maybe Switzerland, I don't know. But there are 3 passages. So I was concerned. I was like, I don't know if I'm doing enough to prepare them to not listen to me, because they're used to listening to me speak. Because I'm a CI teacher. I don't pull a lot. I mean, I do pull some things out, but not, you know, tons. So yeah, I mean, 5 of my 8 students got a 7 out of 7 on the listening, but I pulled it out. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, we're going to practice listening, right? So listening to other people speak French. And like, they didn't need the extra practice. Obviously, like, the 5 of them got a 7. So because they did so well, I know that this year I can back off. You know, I can go, okay, I don't have to press as hard because I don't have to worry. But I do still have that worry. These tests might be more, you know, traditional or whatever, you know, like, am I doing them a disservice?
Well, yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah. But I mean, you've seen over the years that the way you're teaching is actually helping them with the test.
Yeah.
But sort of your main goal, I guess, is to actually help them acquire the language and to make them interested in the language and to make them love the process of language acquisition as opposed to the traditional way. So even if they weren't really getting those grades, which they are, so, you know, it's like a win-win. But if you're like the example you talked about of your colleague's daughter, that you made it interesting for her. So she wanted to go on and continue with friends despite her Spanish background, right?
Yeah.
So that to me is the most important thing. Because I'm not a big fan at all of the, not just the traditional way of teaching, but grades and tests and
yes,
I understand why they do it, but I'm not a fan of that because to me, our job is to help them acquire the language, of course, but to make it interesting so they pursue a career in it or they just feel like learning the language on their free time because they associate it with fun, with a pleasant process. And that works for languages and for anything that you teach them.
I have had, because I teach in the International Baccalaureate program, I do hear back from them more readily than kids who don't, that weren't an IB, right? So they'll come back actually to school and go see their teachers because they all have the same teachers, right? There's only 15 of us now, but back in the day, there were like 7 of us, you know? So they would come back and I've had a lot of kids who said that they decided they were going to minor in French. I mean, I'm like, you're gonna make me cry. You know what I mean? Because French is just like one of those things that no one takes anymore. Unless you're maybe in the the Northeast, maybe you'd be taking French. So the fact that these kids are saying, "Yeah, I liked it so much that I'm gonna minor in it." I've had some kids who took French in college. Just a couple of years ago, I had a kid who went to an Ivy League school. They were required to take a language their freshman year, and they earned the tops. They were like the top language learner of that class. And I was like, well, if you're the top language learner of that class, I mean, you were a hard worker here. Why wouldn't you continue to work hard? But I've had kids who come back and tell me those things, which, isn't that what you want as a teacher to be inspiring? And like, if they don't take French, it doesn't mean I wasn't inspired. Like, I have to remember that. It doesn't mean I'm not inspiring. Sometimes they just need a teacher that they know they can be real with. And that's what I hope they feel like. So I do tell them they can lie to me. I'm like, you can lie. I don't care. I don't care if you like, but if I could go chase you around and go, "Ooh, you said you like to do this, but I never see you doing it." Like, just lie to me. I want you to use the language as much as you can, even if it's not true. But so that they can feel safe to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then these languages might just not be the thing afterwards. So
yeah.
It's fine.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is, I was thinking that because they associated French with, having fun, with actually learning, with feeling safe, you could have taught them Swahili and they would have gone to study Swahili instead.
Absolutely. I wholly believe that. Mm-hmm. A lot of my students are like, "Can you teach English instead?" And I'm like, no, thank you. But they're like, "Can you be another? I would love to have you as another teacher in one of my core classes." I'm like, "Nope, I like the French. I really enjoy teaching. I really enjoy teaching from the beginning to where they can get, right? Because that's true. That's true. Like, I can see it and I go, okay, I took them from that to that. Wow. I mean, they took themselves, right? But like, I was the facilitator.
You helped them.
I helped them. They know what they know because of me or because of my influence. I'm like, we do like a Money Music Club, which is the musical contest that they have in March. So like they listen to a whole bunch of songs and they vote. But they'll go out, that they put these songs on their playlist, they find other songs either by same artist or and they'll come back and they'll go, "Miss Beard, can we do this song in class? Hey, Miss Beard, you should put this in the thing next year. Hey, I just had one of my former students probably 5-6 years ago seriously just texted me a song to play for my classes because the World Cup is going on, Magic in the Air, by the way, that's the song. Mm-hmm. He was like, "You should have them do Magic in the Air this year because the World Cup's going on. I think this would be a great song." So like, even 5 years later, I have kids who contact me with like stuff that they think will be good for my class. I'm just like, "I love you. Thank you."
That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah. Another thing I do too that I think is really impactful for them is that we correspond with French schools. So we have pen pals. And so I just sent the first batch of pen pals, the letters that we wrote yesterday. And I think having somewhat, again, like going back to what we were talking about, my experience when I was in Germany was I was able to connect the language to the people and to the culture. Yeah. So I can't do much about the culture, but I can connect them to a person and a place, right? So the school that we're corresponding with this year is in Bretagne. So so we're learning a lot about Brittany and they're helping us. We're writing in both languages. So we're writing in French about what we're currently learning about in class. Right now it's a lot of identity, right? Like who are you as a person? Who are these other people? How do you get along with them? Like who are we as a culture? And then the English part, the ones the French will be able to use as a study, we're writing about our school system because our school system is different. So they get to actually hear what my students have to say. I've created something more in general because I don't know what they're going to say. So with videos and audio and, you know, obviously words in English so that those kids in France will have an opportunity to connect to us. We're real people. I know we're kind of crazy sounding right now, Americans, but like we're not very like humble, like, you know, we're just normal people. At least in my school, we are. We're just kind of normal people. And it's good for them to see that we're not all just what's happening in
And if they're learning English, your students can make videos in English about
exactly
TikTok, for example, or something that they're both interested in because of their age.
Exactly.
And French students are going to learn English by communicating with your students,
right?
Getting to know about the culture, what they're interested in, and so on, and the other way around, right?
I know, right?
But
fantastic.
Yeah, I was thinking about it because I've talked about it a couple of times that I started learning German recently and
jealous.
I was just thinking about it that I've never been super interested in German culture as opposed to others, like, you know, America or France, you know, for whatever reason, you know.
Yeah.
France, my mom was a French teacher. My parents have friends in France, so I've been to France multiple times. So, you know, just circumstances. But since the moment I started learning German, I find myself getting way more interested in the culture, in knowing the cities and the you know, food and so on. That's one of my passions as well, like, you know, like cultures, other cultures, meeting people from different countries and so on. But I've seen that, you know, that also I'm more interested in Germany, in German traditions, in German food. That's so important that it's not that English or French or Spanish is not just a subject or another another item on your to-do list or whatever you want to call it. It's just a way to communicate, a way to connect with other people, with other cultures, and you know.
Yeah. I agree with you. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, and I was just thinking that when you change schools, if you've been told to get back to the first way you taught the language, it would have killed your soul. I'm getting,
I mean, I would have quit. I mean, like, so I have an incredibly supportive administration. They're incredible. I mean, the administrator, the principal that said, yeah, sure, you can try this out if you want to, is not the same one I have now. So I will say that we had that shift of principal. I was a little concerned because I'm not a popular. I wasn't a popular teacher amongst
teachers,
my colleagues. Because, you know, because I'm the wacko French teacher who doesn't use a textbook, and you know, we're laughing a lot and we're singing a lot, and you know, like, what's all that ruckus going on in that classroom? Why are they having fun? They're supposed to be learning French, you know.
And you're making them feel bad, right? I mean, not feel bad, look bad. Sorry.
Right. No, I mean, just. Yes, like, yeah, yeah. Because they're like, what are they doing over there? Or whatever. But so I was a little worried, right? Because I was worried that, you know, maybe someone might get into the new principal's ear, and that, I don't know what I was worried about. But we did have a couple of really long-term people who did leave with the administration change. But he was my administrator like the first year of observing, and he was like, holy cannoli, this is great. So I didn't really have anything to worry about. He's been very supportive. My district has been very supportive of me. You know, anything I need, my district gets it for me. I have over 1,000 books that are in my library. So I have I have readers, but I also have like beginning things. So I was like, I need things for a novice, right? So that they can get their eyes on the stuff. Meaning a lot of pictures that go with the words so they can start connecting things. Right? Mm-hmm. So they got me. I mean, like they have taken care of me. I can't complain. I will say I did complain. That's not true. I can complain. I was teaching 6 different preps. So I taught French 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then I have IB, and then I had IB. And so I was like, you know, 6. I did it for as long as I could. And I finally was the principal in tears and said, I can't do 6 anymore. I can't. I'm going to have to look for another job because I have children. I have no life. And because it's all prepping. It's not the amount of students that I have in my classroom that's a problem, because it's never a problem with the amount of students. Mm-hmm. The problem is the prep. And yeah, exactly. I know that I could just go in and probably wing it and it would be fine. Like I could just, you know, we could just do it together. The thing is that's not the kind of teacher I am, though. I'm not a wing it kind of teacher. I'm more of a story listening teacher now. Like I do the story listening more than I do the story asking of the TPRS time. I did that for a long time. Do I think it was better? Yeah. Did I feel more comfortable? No, I didn't feel more comfortable with that. So shifting to the story listening was a lot easier for me. It doesn't mean I don't ask questions. It doesn't mean they don't interact. It doesn't mean I don't give them some reign of, choices and ownership in mm-hmm. the story, but I give them just enough, but not too much, that I don't know where it's going, because I didn't know where stories were going. When I first started teaching, they would come up with words like platypus. And I'm like, you guys, I don't know how to say platypus. So I would look platypus up and I was like, I have no idea how to say that, right? It was like Latin. It was like Latin looking. But one of my students was like, hey, Miss Beard, there's a French guy that works at the pool. I'll ask him. So he asked the French guy. He called my phone and said it for me. He's like, this is how you say platypus. So now we had a platypus in the story. I'm going to tell you what, these kids are resourceful when they want what they want. But I didn't know where stories were going, and that terrified me.
Right.
I was like, okay, is it going to be inappropriate? Or it always ended with them dying. They just killed him at the end, and that's how he ended. I'm like, okay, we got to stop killing
characters. Yeah.
And he died.
Right.
The end. Yeah. So, yeah. So I needed to get a little bit more control back, because I'm a little controlling.
Yeah, but you see what works best for you, right? And obviously, I teach adults, so it's a different scenario, of course.
Gotcha. Yeah.
We don't kill all the characters.
Yeah. Oh my God, they loved kill him. Yeah, I will say that. Going back to that kid I was telling you about who was in my class, who raised his hand and said, like, I don't even know how to start a story. All these stories are just like chop, 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 chop. He was right? Because we would just go in and we would tell a story. So I made a decision that I was going to try to create a serial story, right? A story that lasted for a while. And boy, did I create a story that lasted for a while. It's now my French 2 curriculum, that story. It takes the whole entire year.
Nice.
It's a murder mystery. It's all in the past tense. They learn, I tell the story in the past tense, but we read it and sometimes write it in the present tense so they don't forget present, but it's majority we're talking past tense. So learning the difference between preterite and imperfect. Like we haven't talked about grammar at all, but I mean, like, you know, I don't touch the grammar really in a traditional sense. If they ask me a question, that means their brain is ready to hear the answer to it. And so I'll answer it, but I try to answer it in very, very short, easy to understand, or I will just go, this is just for you, Shannon. You know what I mean? Like, only you need this. Because some kids look at me like, what's that mean? And I'm like, no, nothing. It's really
you don't listen to it. No.
Mute me. But that kid's ready to hear the answer. And it's amazing when they ask the question and you answer them honestly about it, they do tend to remember it. But if they don't ask the question, you just tell it, they don't as much. Yeah. So my curriculum now for French 2 is this murder mystery. So I actually really do let them kill. I kill no one in French 1. No one dies. No one's happy. No one's happy in French 1. Because, like, obviously that's more interesting. You know, when you have that conflict, when you have, like, you're looking for something, finding something maybe that doesn't satisfy you, but it's funny. Like, that's, I'm more of like, I want it to be funny than it to be a happy ending.
Right.
But yeah. So but we do so much in French 2 where we learn, you know, all the stuff that they're supposed to learn. We just learn it in the context of the story. And it's not, you know, it's not like, well, first we do daily routines and then we do chores and then we do, you know, it's not quite like that.
Yeah.
But they still learn that stuff.
I was just thinking that if they like to kill people, they can become zombies later. No, just
yeah. I've never done that. I've never had to become a zombie. Yeah. I do tell a Halloween story, though, about Frankenstein. I would say that's the only story I tell that's a happy story, where he goes and searches for friends because, well, like, he's the monster. So, you know, he doesn't think anyone will ever like him. But he does end up finding... He goes to Paris and starts trick-or-treating, and then he finally goes to Notre Dame Cathedral where Quasimodo lives.
There's your friend. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got lots of friends now. So anyway, yeah. So that's a happy ending.
That's
they're
awesome.
Like, oh, this beer, we're so happy. So sometimes they'll give him something happy. But
yeah.
Yeah.
It is so different from the traditional way. We're just thinking about it. Like, yeah. So much more engaging and pleasant and, yeah.
Engaging and creative for me.
Oh my goodness. Right. Yeah.
Because before, all I had to do was go, okay, what are we doing today? Page 13.
Mm-hmm.
Exercises. Oh, okay, get together and talk. Okay, here's a listening app. I'm like, I didn't have to do anything. The text tells you exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was watching a podcast of yours where you guys mentioned that you didn't even have to speak the language. Well, I think was she Indonesian, or I think she was in Indonesia. She was,
right. Yeah.
She was from Australia, right? And they were like, well, we need an Indonesian teacher, and she's like, well, I don't teach it. They're like, no, yeah. It's fine. No, it's fine. But I do think that my, as she said, my French has improved over the years. I mean, I could speak French fairly well, like when I got back from France, but I would say that being the textbook teacher, I didn't use it very much, but I got a lot of it back. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, oh, got you. But one of my students asked me just yesterday, Miss Beard, how fast exactly can you speak in French? And I was like, well, I speak like this all the time to you guys. So I'm like, it would take me a couple weeks probably to get back, right? For my ear to hear it that fast and my mouth to use it that fast. I'm like, I'm used to hearing bad French kids. So, yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't say that, but, you know, I'm high school French. Yeah. It can be harsh sometimes.
Yeah, and I was just thinking that how's your brain feeling after one storytelling class as opposed to 3-4 textbook classes? Like, because you need to improvise, you need to think about different endings, different turns and twists, and you know.
Or when you see panic on their faces or incomprehension, you've got to figure out, okay, I need to stop, or I need to, like, maybe we need to check in with kids. What's going on? What's happening? Why aren't you understanding? Why can't you follow? That happened a lot when I didn't use pictures, which is why, excuse me, I like the story listening part of it. Because now I can scaffold it, right? They can see the picture and they can kind of better understand. They can see the word as well, you write it, but you do that with regular storytelling too, but drawing, making sure you draw the picture with it, I think is has helped out a lot too.
Yeah, and you can prepare beforehand as well, yeah.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because you also have to do a lot of, you have to monitor the words you use as well. Because I mean, with experience, you understand that, okay, so I'm gonna use this word because of the similarity with English, they're gonna understand as opposed to this other word. So you get better at it, and you get a lot of things and words that you already know they're going to be able to understand it, as opposed to the other one. But you have to do it in real time sometimes. Like, you're about to say something, and like, wait, are they going to understand it this way? Let me put it this other way. You know, so you.
Sometimes you'll say
all the time.
Sometimes you'll say the word, and you'll say it out loud, right? And you're like, oh, I shouldn't have used that word.
Right.
We're like, wait, wrong word. Hang on. Oh, let's use this one instead. I've done that. I'm like, oh, wait. Or I start the sentence, and I'm like, oh, that's way too complex. Like, what am I doing?
Exactly.
Like, okay, this is just subjective. Ignore it. Yeah. Like, sorry about that. I was getting high and mighty here.
This subjective is a funny one, because that's everyone's favorite when it comes to Spanish as well. Like, obviously, my students don't care for the most part, because I'm putting up so much content that people who come to me already know what to expect, right? So I don't get any student that wants to learn grammar. And that saves me a lot of, a lot of effort, convincing and things like that, which is great. But
it's really tiring, though. You know, you were talking about how do you feel after, you know, a class period of storytelling, tired. I have to plan it so I don't do a story in every class.
Right.
On the same day. I have to pace myself because for me, I this is the kind of energy I have all day. So it's not just, you know, it's not just, oh, I'm really good in the morning or really good in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. That's my peak. This is me. Like, some people are like, how do you maintain it all day throughout? Because what I put into it, the students are going to feed off of that, right? And give that mm-hmm. back to me. I honestly believe that. And that's how they start. Susie Gross back in the day, she was like, what you have to do is you have to deposit a whole bunch of love into each one of these kids' love banks, right? I loved that. I remember it to this day because it was 20 years ago. I heard it for the first time. I still believe that it's true. You have to give them influxes of this love, because there is going to be a point where you're going to have to make a withdrawal. And you're going to mess up. You're going to say something upset them, and you've got to have enough in there, so you just like throw that love at them. And that love is the songs, is the enjoyment, mm-hmm. is the laughter, is the creating, is the caring, is the knowing that you're learning something and it's scary for you, you're taking a lot of risk even in enrolling in this class. I know that some of the kids are faster than you, but you're still trying really hard, you know what I mean? Like, it's that you have to just keep throwing that at them. It's like, for me, since I'm the only French teacher at the high school that I teach at, I mean, like, they have me all the way through. Once I've hooked them, they stay. Once I've got them, they're there.
Yeah.
If they don't like me, if they don't like the way I teach, because they want to have an easy grade, my expectations in a CI classroom, I think, like, I need you to listen to me. I need you to pay attention. It's not even just pay. I need you to engage. I need you to pay attention. I need you to engage, because I don't know how else. Even if it's not engaging with your mouth, you got to engage with the brain, mm-hmm. right? You got to engage with the eyes. Like, if you're looking over there, I'm going to think you're not paying attention. And then I'm going to be like, woo, what happened? What, how did I lose you? Come back to me.
Mm-hmm.
Let them kind of wander about, because again, engagement in a CI classroom, I think, is so paramount. I don't, when they're gone.
Yeah, they're not acquiring the language if they're not paying attention, right?
Yeah, yes. Oh, and then they're already behind and they get frustrated, and it's like, okay, well, you weren't here though. I will say COVID has done a lot of good, being quarantined and that kind of thing, in that I had actually spent a lot of time on my website where I put my entire curriculum. So all my stories were on there. Well, sample ones, right? So the skeletons there, obviously it's going to be different for each class because are slightly different, but the overall skeleton of the class of the story is there. So if a kid misses, for example, they could always go onto my website and go to that particular story, click on it, and listen to me tell a similar story. Again, it's using the book. Listen, here's the beautiful thing about CI: the words are recycled and recycled and recycled and recycled and recycled. You don't ever have to worry like, oh, I. Maybe there's a word in a story that, like, monkey. Okay, they'll probably never need to know monkey, but that's like one of my main characters, because he has really long arms, likes to hug everybody. So maybe they don't need to know monkey, but likes to hug, wants to hug. They're learning those modal verbs, right? I don't tell them. I'm like, this is a modal verb. This verb has an infinitive after it, and infinitive just means, I just go, hey, how come that R is there? And they're like, because it means two. Perfect. Move on. Right. So they don't know it's called an infinitive, but they know that after once, they have to put the R at the end of that word.
Yeah, and naturally, you're going to use the most common words. It's just going to happen, you know?
Why are you going to use words that people don't use, you know? Why do they need to know strawberry? Not strawberry, raspberry. Why do they need to know raspberry, blackberry? I mean, unless you like it, that's what I tell them. I go, we don't need to learn 150 fruits and vegetables, food words. We don't need that. A handful of what people actually eat, right? But if you like raspberries, let's learn raspberry. Mm-hmm. If you like, you know, this certain kind of whatever, you learn that. But like, that doesn't mean we all have to learn it because we all don't care. But if you let them learn what they care about, it's so much easier to get them to learn the things that they may not care about, you know, because they're like, okay.
Yeah, I was just thinking that all those blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, I'm even confused in my own native language, to be honest, so, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, a strawberry, I know
strawberry,
that.
Strawberry, yeah. Strawberry's easy, yeah.
Raspberry, blueberry, wait a minute.
Which
one is that, you know? Yeah. But yeah, you were talking about that period. I think it was Catherine Shetman. She's a German teacher. And because of the pandemic, she decided to record stories at home. And I think at the beginning, because she wanted to send them to her students, but she put them up on YouTube. And that's what helped me start with German.
Yeah.
It's fine. But yeah, it's the same idea you were talking about, that, you know, your students now can listen to it on the website, but same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I'm being evaluated this year by an administrator I haven't been evaluating before. And we were chatting and he's like, well, have you ever thought about like selling your curriculum? And I'm like, no one wants my monster of a curriculum. but I was like, I mean, fair enough. You know, I could put my stuff online, which I do, but I keep my website, well, right now it's open, but I usually keep my website closed and like private. And I think it's probably just because I don't want people judging me. Honestly, I don't want anyone judging me and like sending me notes or anything like that. So I try to keep it just for my students because that's what it's functional for. But I have so much stuff up there for IB that if like there were IB teachers, I could like go, hey, why don't you head over to my website? And it gives you some ideas anyway of like listening things that I have found helpful.
That's the thing.
It's just that whole, it's the whole.
I totally get it. Yeah. But it's funny because, first of all, you're using it for your kids, right? So that's the important thing. But then the funny thing is we usually think about what other people can say, what are they going to tell me? And we don't think about how many people you can actually help. Teachers, students.
But let's be honest.
That's a deeper topic.
yeah, it is. I was gonna say, but let's be honest. Like, you can be praised 100 times by your students. It's the one that cuts, right? And that's the one you remember. That's the one that keeps me up at night. But I'll be honest, that's what made me change as well. That kid who was like, how dare you try to expect us to understand what you're saying when you don't speak French to us. And all of a sudden you're like, yip, 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 and in French. And like that hit hard. You know, I saw that kid a couple of years after. He was dating one of the students that I had in my class and he popped in with her. And I told him that. He was like, oh, you shouldn't have listened to me. I was a dumbass back then. And I was like, no. I mean, yes, maybe we're, okay, maybe we're, I was like, but I listened to you because I think you had a point. I think you had a point and that helped me. Again, I think it really did. It was probably the first time I ever really questioned, not what I was doing, but I questioned my effectiveness, right? And I was like, what kind of teacher do I really want to be? Because like at the first, I was just trying to like keep my head above the water.
Yeah.
You know, just keep it above so I could breathe. But then once I'd settled into who I was, I was like, am I heading towards the goal that I really want to be at? In 10 years, I'm going to be doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's really the way I want to be doing things. And so, yeah, I'm glad I can't say enough about, you know, finding TPRS. It saved me. It saved me as a teacher. I don't know how much longer I would have done it.
Right.
You know, there's some issues here and there with, you know, happened over the last 20 years, but everybody has controversy and not everybody is out in the public. But I can't say thank you enough to Blaine and Carmen and Jason Fritz and Carol Gobb and Christy Placido. And like, I can't say enough to thank them for helping guide me through some of the most turbulent times. Because this was 2003, this was 20 years ago, 19 years ago, this is my 20th year using CI. And so, I mean, like all the hiccups and bumps and, you know, I will say we all grew together, right? Like we all developed, we're not the same teacher we were 20 years ago. No one is, but like, we're not. Like we find something better, we switch. We find something more effective, we use it. We're not opposed to using things that are effective in the classroom, and we're willing to try it.
Yeah.
And I think that's brilliant. Right, we're not scared. We're like, let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely a pioneer. I'm a frontiersman. Yeah, I'm out there. I'm not Blaine Ray. Okay, no one is Blaine Ray. No one can do what Blaine does. But we try to mimic him, and then we realize, okay, we have to just be ourselves. But we're still out there, right behind him. Right, he's leading the way. He's the first one out there. But we're all like right there behind him, trying out these new things and doing this. Mm-hmm. And some people are settlers, and they need more time. You know, I'm not one of those. I'm the kind of person who's like, oh, this sounds fascinating. Let's try it. If it doesn't fit, if it fails, if it doesn't work, let's try it. Let's figure out what it is that failed and see if we can fix it. Is it a fundamental issue with the activity, with the methodology or whatever? Is it fundamental? Okay, then let's get rid of it entirely. But if it's just a crack, you know, can we fix that crack? Because if we can fix it and make it effective, it's how is it going to hurt? Anyway, it helps everyone. It helps all the teachers in the department. It helps all the students who are in language class. Yeah. Why don't we just all get together and help each other? Circle the wagons, right? Let's circle the wagons. Let's try things out and get going. But there are people who don't like to, they like to talk about it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. But when I said when you put it out, You know, you think about what people can say, but you might be that blame for someone else.
True.
That's amazing. I was thinking, even if they don't tell you, but they probably would.
Yeah.
But you know, it's and you get that feedback that you got from that students, and then it's all about, listen, you know, just tell yourself the truth that there is some truth in it.
Yeah.
As it happened with you, or is just someone criticizing me for he had a bad day and
it's their problem, not mine. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have to, I guess so. Yeah, you do have to reflect.
Yeah.
Well, you might be like making me think a little bit about like opening up my stuff, but people always ask for it. But like I'm always like, you really don't want it. I was like my French 2 curriculum is a year long thing. It's way too commitment for anybody. It's a monster. I love it, which is why I do it, right? I love it. So, but I don't know if everyone would. But
the reason I'm talking about it is because I mean, in a different setting, because I teach adults, I have my own project, but I was scared of making videos at the beginning and things like that, obviously, like a lot. I'm putting things out there, you know, feedback and so on. And the reason I'm talking about it is because it's actually the thing I love the most. Like creating videos and talking about these things, trying to help other people is the thing that makes me the happiest by far. And I would have gotten there if I hadn't put it out.
Yeah. Good point.
That's what I meant. But
fair. Yeah.
I guess it's not for everybody. I don't know, but if you don't try it, and as you said, you like to try things out, so.
I do. You know, the thing is I definitely 100% have imposter syndrome, though. I mean, like, that's just like that syndrome where you feel like I'm not as good as I think that I am. I'm not as good as I pretend I am. I'm not as good as, you know, other people think. They see that and they're like, they go, oh my goodness. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's because I'm a really good actor. You know, I'm really good at pretending. You just don't know. But like with people who do know, it would you see what I mean? Like that terrifies me, that whole idea. Mm-hmm. My students wouldn't know any different. They trust me.
Uh-huh.
She's like, oh, you know so much, Miss Beard. I'm like, I don't know everything. I just pretend to.
You mean imposter syndrome with your storytelling or your teaching skills or with
all of it. Yeah, all of it. I know that it's not true though. Like honestly, when I switched to the IB program, I was really scared, right? Because I was like, okay, it's gonna show, you know, like, but mm-hmm. my students do quite well. So I know it's not true, but it's one of those, I need to go to therapy. I need to go to therapy about it. Cause I really think I have low self.
Yeah, there are many
things there. Especially about like what I do for a living. Everyone's just so much smarter than me. You know, Tina Hargaden, I listen to her and I'm just like, this woman just, people just have these thoughts. And I'm like, okay, I'll follow you. I got, or they have an idea. And I'm like, that's a great idea. But what if I do this with it? You know what I mean? So I don't usually come up with the idea. I tweak it and then it works. Yeah. Right? That's
But you're talking about other people, but you're not in the head. So they might sound overconfident and all great, but you don't know what's going on inside, right?
Wait. Yeah, they could be like in the same mode.
And then when you switch to the other school, to the other system, like whenever you do something for the first time, you're gonna be nervous, you're gonna be feel scared. Yeah. There's no other way.
True.
First of all. And then I think, I mean, not necessarily here, but in most cases, imposter syndrome comes from trying to look as an expert when you're not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not talking about your case, but
100%.
When you went to the other school, the reason you had that imposter syndrome or you were afraid of it was because you wanted them to look at you as an expert, but maybe you weren't yet, right? And if you were, it was gonna play out, right? So it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Unfortunately, 50 years of trauma will be healed in the hour and a half I have with you. But but yeah, I mean, all of these are solid points. Yeah, I mean, I should, yeah, because obviously I put myself out there in my classroom. I mean, 100%, but you're right. I mean, like, I do go to workshops and I do talk to people, but I don't like to present, right? I'm not really a presenter. I know it doesn't seem like it, but I'm very introverted. I don't really like to talk to people I don't know. This is perfectly fine because I'm talking to a student. You know what I mean? And other people listen, I can't see them, so it's all cool. So I really don't put myself out there professionally. I really haven't, but that might be something I think about because I know they always like, we need more people. And I'm like, yeah. But people are mean. Teachers are mean. They can be mean. Like, they write mean things on, like, you know, slips, and you have to leave like comments and stuff. I couldn't do it. I couldn't handle it. It would just crush me. And so I kind of like know myself. That's why I stopped asking for student feedback, because I remembered the one kid who was like, I'm sick of your dogma, Miss Beard. And I'm like, dog? What's dogma? What? Why is he saying that about me? So.
Yeah, but it's a funny game. A funny mental game, I mean. Because I on one side, I understand why you hate it. But on the other side, feedback was what actually helped you as switch careers. I mean, not careers, but the way you went about it. You're way happier because of it. So it's a funny game.
Well, you know, and that was, we typed everything. We were on like Google groups. They were Yahoo groups back then, right? Like that's how we communicated with each other. But I mean, now with being able to Zoom, everybody knows how to do it now too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I still think that's the best thing is to find a mentor who knows what they're doing, who can help guide you through. So anybody wants a mentor? Gotcha. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, let us know.
20 years of experience.
Okay.
Don't listen to me about my imposter syndrome.
Nice. All right. The episode was fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you. Christine.
Yeah, no, thank you.
And if you ever feel like sharing your stories, I'll leave the link down below.
Oh, good plan. Will you send me the link so that I can see it? My colleagues were like, "Ooh, we want to watch it, Tina."
Yeah,
and
yeah, absolutely.
Like,
no, absolutely.
I'll get it for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Well, it was so nice to meet you.
Same here. And I forgot one final question. Is there anybody you'd like me to interview?
I
started making this question because it helps me, obviously, but
yeah,
you know, because it's someone that you think has something to say. I mean, we all have something to say, but.
Yeah, there is a woman who teaches in Lee Summit, Missouri. Her name is, she goes by Bess, but I think it's Elizabeth Hales, H-A-Y-L-E-S, Hales. Mm-hmm. But her name's Elizabeth Hales. She's a French teacher. She actually writes literature and she publishes it. So it's been published with Notre Histoire. I don't know. It's like, I used it during the pandemic. When we were shut down, I used it for my lower kids, but it's like it was an online thing. But anyway, she actually writes stories.
Okay.
Published. She is, we used to get together, she and I and another, and a Spanish teacher in another town. We would get together and just like talk shop, right? We would share material. We have like a shared, we would give each other homework. Like, okay, we're going to create a movie talk. We're going to create this. And then we would put in this folder and we would just be able to use each other's things. And she's great. And so is that Spanish teacher. She has something to say. She used to be the Spanish teacher at the town in Lawrence, which is like a hop, skip, and a jump for me. She's another really good, Amanda Williams.
Okay.
That's her name, Amanda Williams. She's a really good, she was the state language, what is it called? KSWLA president. So she's been president. She's been in charge of getting people to get, to try to get presenters at these conferences. She would be a great person to talk to too. She is a Spanish teacher in a Spanish department where no one wants to teach the way she does, but they won't keep her from doing it. They won't prevent her from teaching that way, but she kind of has to figure out a way to. So she might have an interesting story in that way too. She's a fascinating lady.
I'll keep this part and send it to them.
Yeah, good. Well, I didn't say anything bad, so that's good. Yeah, no, nothing but positive things to say about them. They have helped me so much in my late, like in my later teaching. You know what I mean? So we haven't gotten together for many years, but
perfect.
But I look back and I treasure those times. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I'll definitely reach out to them. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina.
All right. I'll watch you on YouTube.
Perfect. Bye bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed it. And here you can subscribe because I want to help you understand that you too can learn any language when enjoying the process every step of the way. I'm convinced, really. And here you have another episode that I'm sure you're going to love and the entire list of episodes so far, the entire list of interviews with teachers, polyglots, researchers, and many more.